Hey there, and welcome to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden. This week, it's not a normal episode of the podcast since NASCAR is on an off week. We're not doing a typical episode, but I have a special interview to bring you and all of our listeners and watchers or whatever. This week, I have an exclusive interview with Ricky Stenhouse Jr., driver of the number 47 Chevrolet for JTG Daughtry Racing. Fun fact, Mr. Stenhouse, who's 35, is a native of Olive Branch, Mississippi. That's right across the Mississippi River in right near Memphis. That basically makes Ricky the local driver, the local cup driver for the state of Arkansas. And he's the defending Daytona 500 winner. So I wanted to have him on the podcast to introduce Arkansas to its local driver and get a sense of what life has been like for Ricky since he won the Daytona 500 back in February, which was his third career NASCAR Cup Series win and his first since 2017. So it had been a long time. But now Ricky Stenhouse Jr., he's been enjoying the perks of being a Daytona 500 winner, including going to ring the opening bell at the Wall Street. And he's also had a street temporarily named for him in his hometown in front of Olive Branch's City Hall. So he's gotten the big stuff and he's gotten the small stuff. But no, I have about a 15-minute interview with Ricky. We cover quite a few topics. But it was a nice time. I interviewed him last week while I was covering the NASCAR race weekend at Worldwide Technology Raceway. So here is my interview with Daytona 500 winner Ricky Stenhouse Jr. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and I was wanting to have you on it because you're essentially like the local driver for Arkansas since you're right over the border. So I guess just to start off, how are things going for you right now? You're 4 months out from winning the Daytona 500. You're doing really good so far this year. Right now, your average finish is 13.5, which is actually the best of your Cup career.
Yeah.
So like, what does it feel like to be Ricky Stenhouse Jr. right now?
That's going good. Obviously, winning the Daytona 500 is definitely top of the list. But since then, I think our race team's been doing a really good job of preparing good race cars, bringing good race cars to the racetrack, and giving me a good opportunity to finish well. And so everybody's been working really hard together, and I like where we're at as a race team. Still got a ton of room for improvement, which is nice. Knowing that we're getting the results, having the races that we need and want, but also knowing that hey, there's definitely still some room for growing opportunities, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year to continue that.
Does this season feel different for you? Does it feel like you're on an upswing like this? Different from other years?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm excited to get in the race car each and every week because I feel. Feel confident in what my guys are preparing, and it makes my job easier at times, as far as I don't have to push the car as hard to get the speed out of it, and it's nice being able to be frustrated with a 15th place finish. And so there's definitely times that we've underperformed this year, and there's times that we've kind of over executed and got better finishes out of our car than really what we should have that day. So you take the good with the bad and you just keep learning.
So we're recording this in the driver's meeting room at Gateway, and you were just talking with a bunch of little kid racers with the NASCAR youth program. So what was it like getting to like tell your story with them for a little bit?
Yeah, it's cool. Realizing that I was in their shoes 30 years ago, racing go-karts, and I never had opportunities to come and be at a cup track like this the way they are. But it's just cool to see all their faces, knowing that they're going out and competing. Like I did when I was their age. And so, it was really cool to talk to them and, just at least give them a little advice that I had. They're running different race cars than I ever ran. I've never ran quarter midgets like they run, but overall it was cool to hang out with them.
So
you told, shared with them things like, I didn't know. I didn't know your dad was a sprint car racer. Yeah. And I didn't know, like, you first showed up at a track when you were, like, 6 weeks old. So growing up in Olive Branch, Mississippi, like,
what was, like, the racing environment like there in, like, northwest Mississippi?
Yeah, it was great. You know, my dad raced at Memphis Motorsports Park, you know, ever since I can remember. And then across the river in West Memphis, Arkansas, Riverside Speedway is where I grew up. And so those two tracks are tracks that I grew up racing at, racing go-karts around that area. And, you know, the sprint car racing scene, dirt scene was really big. And, you know, so my dad would race on Friday and Saturdays. We'd ride dirt bikes on Sundays. And then when I started racing go-karts, I ran a lot in the winter, you know, on Saturdays. But for the most part, you know, my dad would race on Fridays, and then I could, you know, race on Saturdays. And, you know, so it was awesome growing up in that area and watching my dad race.
So at what point did your career really start to, like, take off? Like, what was the thing that, like, jump-started it to you winding up in the Cup Series?
I don't know. I mean, I ran go-karts for a long time. I was 15 years old, still racing go-karts. And then started racing sprint cars at 15 that same year, and we had a decent first year and kind of turned a few heads. And then you know, 2000, that was in 2003, 2004 and 5 were decent years. You know, had a lot of speed, you know, traveled around, you know, won races. 2006 was probably kind of the year that I felt like kind of really jumpstart my career. Wow. You know, just we started running some more 410 stuff, went to Ohio Sprint Speed Week. We won 3 out of the 5 races that week, and you know, competed against some really good cars. And then that's when I signed with a management company. And you know, I feel like 2006 was probably that year that really kind of got things rolling. And then 2007, I went out to Manzanita Speedway, took our sprint car. I was racing Silver Crown cars for this team called Carl Edwards and RE Technologies Racing. So Carl Edwards kind of teamed up with a guy named Roger Johnson that I was able to run their Silver Crown cars on the dirt. And we won both races out at Manzanita. And then Tony Stewart had his USAC sprint car team out there as well. And then one of his drivers got hurt. And then because I was signed with the management company and because I had done so well out in Arizona, they called me to fill in for their driver that year. So I started racing for Tony Stewart in 2007. And then 2008, I started racing ARCA for Jack Roush. So I feel like that 06, 07 timeline was kind of, you know, two pretty, you know, kind of pivotal years for me.
So okay, growing up in Mississippi, was NASCAR a thing you aspired to do? When did that come into the view, your viewpoint, I guess?
No. You know, I just wanted to race for a living. I mean, I didn't care if it was sprint car. I didn't really care what it was. You know, I watched NASCAR, but I don't really ever feel like I remember, like, oh man, that's really, you know, I want to go race NASCAR. You know, I felt like I was always, and I kind of still am, I'm more of just like kind of in the moment of where I'm at. You know, so when I was racing go-karts, I was all about racing go-karts. When I started sprint car racing, that's all I thought about was sprint car racing. And so, you know, I would say 2007, you know, when I started racing a little bit on pavement in the USAC cars, you know, signed with a management company is when I really was like, man, I guess there's an opportunity. We could go, you know, stock car racing and, you know, who knows, make it to NASCAR, right? You know, the Cup Series. And, man, 11.
We'll wing it, see what happens.
Here I am. So, yeah, I just always wanted to race for a living, and I didn't care what that was.
So flash forward to this year, you win the Daytona 500, third career win. I'm curious, like, the next morning when you woke up, like, did it take you a minute to, like, for your mind to maybe catch up with you? Like, oh, yeah, I just won the Daytona 500.
Not really, because I don't really know if I really fell asleep long enough to wake up. I think I went to bed about close to 4 and got up at 6:30, 6:45. So I didn't get much sleep. But, no, I mean, we hit the ground running that next morning with a ton of interviews and – champions breakfast and doing everything in Victory Lane. It was pretty surreal being, you know, still in Daytona, right, after the race. You don't win, you're like the first one to the airport and ready to get home after a long 500 miles. But it was cool. We were still there and celebrating. It was awesome.
So in the 4 months since you've gotten to, like, ring the opening bell at Wall Street, you've had, like, a welcome home celebration in Olive Branch, had a street named after you in front of City Hall. What's been, like, the most surreal part of this whole thing for you?
Going to New York was pretty cool. There's a lot of people that rely on the stock exchange and all of that going on. So, opening the bell was, ringing the bell was really cool. And it ended up being an up day for the market, which was awesome. So I'll take a little credit for that. I think, just really the whole experience. I mean, we went to Disney, Monday afternoon to Monday night, and then Chicago, and just was busy of, being able to promote NASCAR, the Daytona 500, trying to, be in the face of the sport for, that week was really cool. Putting our partners out there with Kroger and all our great partners underneath them, and our race team. Our race team's been at this for a long time, and it was cool to, be able to represent them and what we're able to do together. And then I still, feel like every week we show up and we're showing what this race team's capable of. And that's been fun.
So has the Daytona 500, winning the Daytona 500, has it changed your life in any way?
I wouldn't say it's just like drastically changed, other than it's nice being introduced as the 2023 Daytona 500 winner. That definitely, I would say helps with some cheers, which is nice. But, it did give us a lot more confidence, moving forward, through this season. I know my guys, they've, like I said earlier, they're giving me better race cars each and every week than what we had last year. So it gave us all confidence. And so I think, for me, it's changed the way we approach the weekends and the confidence that we have, going forward.
So you mentioned being able to promote your sponsors. One of your sponsors is NOS Energy. I was curious, like, you've had that partnership with them for a while. Like, how did that originally, come about?
I don't know exactly remember how it came about, but it came about, I started working with them in 2012 after we won the championship in 2011. And yeah, they've really integrated themselves in everything that I do, from my dirt racing to, when I was at Roush, in the Cup Series, and then, switched over to JTG Doherty Racing. They bought in and, came to support me over there, using the Kroger program and using all the resources that we have at JTG. So, for me, it's been an awesome partnership. And, like I said, being able to own a sprint car team, and them, if it wasn't for them, I definitely wouldn't have a sprint car team. And so for them to be a part of, me giving back to the sport that, helped me get to the position I'm in now is, has been, amazing.
This year you're repaired with your old crew chief, Mike Kelly. How integral has he been to this resurgence for you guys?
Yes, he's been, really important. He came over to JTG with me at the same time, but he took a backseat role. There was, an important piece that I feel like has kind of helped us prepare for where we're at now. Mike really kind of took control and lead of, making sure that he learned all the ins and outs of this new car when we were building it, getting parts and pieces in, trying to figure out, how this thing worked and how it went together. So he spent a lot of time on that. And, and then he was able to kind of take a back seat last year and kind of watch how we ran our races, kind of look at it from, a 30,000 feet view and, all right, hey, now that he's in position to, make the calls and make changes and, run the race teams, he could see from above, where we struggled and the things that we did well and the things that we needed to work on. And so, You know, I think he's takes a lot of pride in that. You know, I think he brings a lot of positive attitude to our team. He believes in me, he believes in everyone on our team. You know, we haven't really changed anyone on our team. You know, but we're just doing a lot, you know, with what we have. And, you know, I think his leadership has been huge.
Which area do you think the 47 team has improved the most overall so far this season?
I think just bringing, you know, better race cars to the racetrack, more prepared, better setups. I think I'm doing a better job of, you know, taking what the car will give me, giving better feedback. But, you know, all that goes hand in hand. You know, when the cars are close, I can give little feedback that's going to make us better. So, you know, I feel like them showing up with better cars, you know, gives me a better opportunity to be better at my job and you know, giving great feedback. And winning the 500 definitely helps me be a little bit more relaxed and not press as hard. Mm-hmm. But like I'm not trying to take a 25th place car and finish 15th with it. You know, I'm trying to take a 15th place car and finish 15th with it, and that makes my job easier.
I guess for my last question, this is something I've always wanted to ask a driver like you. You've become very, very good at super speedway racing, but you come from a background where there isn't super speedway racing. You're racing on dirt, you're racing on short tracks. So once you got to this level, like how does someone with your background become good at that style of racing that doesn't exist anywhere else?
Yeah, I would say, you know, when I was in the, you know, Xfinity series, I didn't necessarily like the speedways because I felt like we were better at all the other racetracks, and I was really new to that. When I moved to Cup, well, I mean, we got good finishes, but I wouldn't say I was really, you know, going out there and controlling the race and you know, knowing what I was doing. In Cup, probably 2016, 2017, I felt like we got, when I was at Roush, we got our Cup cars where they were fast on super speedways. We qualified up front. I was able to make moves and do things that, you know, helped me be on the offense. And my spotter at the time, Mike Herman Jr., I felt like had a lot of knowledge of what to do in a lot of situations. So I felt like I learned a lot from him, spotting for me as well. And, you know, just, you know, once you have a fast car, you have a little bit more confidence at those racetracks, and then you're learning. You're learning at a faster rate because you're making more moves instead of just riding around in line. And so, I think a combination of all that helped me kind of learn what to do and what not to do on speedways. And then now, my spotter Tab, he's a great speedway racer as well. Gives a lot of good information, and has won some big races on speedways before. So, just having confidence in your spotter and having fast race cars, and you know, putting that together with the experience that I've been able to put together over the, you know, I would say the last 5 years.
One thing that's always kind of fascinated me is hearing drivers like Tony Stewart and even like Dale Earnhardt, who are really good at super speedway racing, saying they didn't really like it. Is there any area of racing that you're particularly good at that you're not a fan of?
I mean, there's racetracks that I care for more than others, but you know, I mean, I think the speedway, like, I feel like we're good at it, but it's frustrating when, you know, then you can get caught up in, you know, a wreck at four of them in a row, right? So, I mean, you're, like, we went through, I think, a period of, you know, 2 or 3 years where our average finish was, like, less than 10. Like, we were in the top 10 just about every speedway race, and everything was going good. But then I went through 4 or 5 races where we didn't finish better than 20th. So, you know, that's the frustrating part of speedway racing.
Thanks, Ricky. Thanks for joining me, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Daytona 500 winner Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Thank you to the folks at Chevrolet who arranged to have that interview conducted at Worldwide Technology Raceway a couple weeks ago. Anyway, this episode is airing the week following the NASCAR Cup Series race at Sonoma Raceway in California, going into the only off weekend of the year. So we're giving ourselves an off week when it comes to a normal episode of Dropping the Hammer. So next week's episode will be a regular episode where we will recap Sonoma Raceway and everything that happened there, and then preview the race weekend at Nashville Super Speedway, which starts the second half of the NASCAR season. So looking forward to that. But thank you for listening and watching to this episode and this interview with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I'm Daniel McFadden. I'll talk to you guys next week.